Are you tired of watching the same old travel videos on the internet? Well, then check out MikeNoGoZones.com, a travel documentary that's breaking barriers. I go to the places that the media tells you to fear, where no one else dares to go. Baltimore, Opa-locka, south side of Chicago, and more. Go to MikeNoGoZones.com.
Michelle Kaufman is always kind enough to join us to talk a little Inter, but we, you know, now we're going to talk Inter, we'll talk life, we'll talk COVID-19, we'll go over a lot of things with Michelle Kaufman. Of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Kauf Sports, like I and so many others do, and catch her work at the Miami Herald website. Mrs. Kaufman, how are you doing?
Doing fine. I'm actually keeping busy, which is good. I think it's important that everybody find something to keep them busy, because if people just stare at the news and at their phones, you know, it's going to make you insane. So I'm actually lucky that I've been doing, they moved me over because there's no sports going on. For the most part, I'm doing business stories on the coronavirus effects on the tourism industry. So I had a big story today on hotel workers. Over 330,000 hotel workers in the state of Florida were laid off. So 330,000 people out of work in the hotel industry, and with no, you know, no bailout in sight and no support in sight. So they're all scrambling to make ends meet. So that was kind of a depressing story. I interviewed, you know, hotel workers from the Diplomat and the Hyatt Regency in Miami, and people are really scrambling and scared about what's going to happen. So that's kind of a sobering thing to cover that sort of thing. And then yesterday, on a lighter note, I interviewed some Inter Miami players, Luis Robles and Will Trapp. And they told me about first world problems, you know, soccer player problems, which is, you know, they're trying to stay in shape. They have to be, you know, sequestered, and so they're staying in shape. And the interesting thing is that the team issued, each player has their own personalized GPS vest. It's a vest that has a GPS chip in it, and they use it during regular training too. But they were required to go last week and each one pick up their vest. And the coaches are monitoring them through the GPS to make sure that they're doing the running programs that they have been assigned. So nobody can cheat and tell the trainers that they did their running if they didn't do their running. They're training they're monitoring their pace, they're monitoring their distance, and they're making sure that they're staying in shape and doing what they're supposed to do. And the other thing is, each player has their own personalized training regimen that they're doing, you know, based on position and based on individual. And some of the guys don't have weights at home, like Luis Robles does not own a weight, you know, he doesn't have weights at his house. So he's been using milk jugs filled with water. So that's what he's been using for his resistance and weight training. He's using milk jugs. So, you know, the guys are getting creative. The coaches are doing their best to stay on top of these guys and monitor them and make sure that they're at least, you know, staying fit. They're obviously not doing any ball work, and it's different from going to practice every day, but they are trying to stay fit from a distance.
Now, are the Miami players ruining toilet paper? Because, you know, a lot of people could use it, by the way.
Oh, you mean the kicking around the toilet paper thing that they're doing?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if they use it after they kick it around. Do they take off a few squares and use the rest of the roll? I don't know. But, yeah, that's definitely a thing that's going around the soccer world. It's sort of a public service message where soccer players all over the world are juggling rolls of toilet paper with their feet while washing their hands and trying to, you know, get people to stay inside and wash their hands and all that stuff. So, yeah, there have been a lot of toilet paper memes and stuff going on with soccer players.
That is awesome. The other thing that Inter was, and I see, like, Kiss came out with their Destroyer cover, and it has all four of the members, and they're all separated. So a lot of these musicians are getting their famous album covers, and they're using social distancing in the album covers. Well, Inter Miami did that over the weekend with their logo.
They did, actually. Yeah, that story actually got some traction. The other day they decided to release a new logo for this period of time, where the birds, the herons, where their legs are intertwined in their normal logo, they've separated them. They separated the two birds, and you know, there's a big space between them. So you know, and the idea is they're trying to promote social distancing by having their birds be apart in their logo. So you know, I had seen something similar with the Olympic rings. The Olympic rings all separated instead of linked together. I don't know if that's where they got the idea. That's the first one that I saw like that in sports. And then, you know, they decided to change theirs, which I thought was pretty clever. So I wrote a story about that. And then someone wrote me and said, hey, the U, the University of Miami, has always been practicing social distancing in their logo because the little U has a little space between the orange and the green, part of the U.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, some people have said that the Dolphins have used social distancing with the Super Bowl because they never win one. So yeah, it's kind of cold. Yeah, I know. We've been taking the social distancing thing to a point where obviously the jokes come rolling in. Speaking of sports, and since you're always on top of Inter, but you're always on top of the Olympics. So it looks like the IOC was finally shamed into finally canceling it this week. Once Canada stepped up, which I was really proud of Canada saying, no, man, unless it's next year, we're out. And I'm sure, and I know the U.S. was putting pressure, but eventually other countries were going to follow suit, and the IOC knew it. And it wasn't really that they were doing the right thing. It was almost kind of like it's kind of like Commissioner Silver from the NBA, that once Rudy Gobert went down, he said, oh, you know what, this idea of playing games without the fans, that's not a good idea. We're shutting this whole thing down. He was kind of shamed into it, too. So was the IOC here.
Yeah, the IOC, well, Canada stepped up. Australia had stepped up that day, too, or the day before. So, yeah, things were starting to – the pressure was starting to mount. And, you know, the Olympics is – it's difficult because the country of Japan has spent, you know, billions of dollars, you know, to prepare for an Olympics. It's not like just you close down the NBA, the stadiums are the same. The arenas are the same arenas or the NFL.
Right.
You know, they weren't built specifically for one event. They're there and you can close it up for a while and then you reopen it. The Olympics, you know, an Olympic host country has spent 5 years building and preparing to host this massive, massive event. They build aquatic center. They build a gymnastics venue. They build, you know, boxing venues, a track stadium. You know, they build all the dormitories. They build an athlete's village. You know, there's a lot of expenses that go into hosting an Olympics. And so it's very difficult to just turn around and say to Japan, you know, we're pulling this event. We're not having it. You know, enjoy all your empty stadiums and empty village and empty everything, you know. So I think there was definitely a big financial component to try to figure out, you know, if there was any way possible to host it, they were going to do it. But at some point, you know, it became obvious that it's not the right thing to do and people can't even get there. There aren't any international flights. I mean, there wouldn't even be a way to get to Japan probably in July from a lot of places in the world, and people don't want to be, you know, it's just too much. It's too big of an event to decide at the last minute that they can have it. They really have to decide now. So, yeah, they made the right decision. It's tough on the athletes. I did do a story the other day. If you want to look, I did a story on local, you know, the local Olympic athletes and coaches and their reaction to it. And, you know, Randy Abelman, who's the diving coach at UM, he has a very interesting perspective because he has five divers right now who are Olympic hopefuls from the U.S. and one from Canada and one from Australia. And so he's been coaching the last seven Olympics. He had five Olympic divers whose entire lives the last 4 years were gearing for this moment this summer. And now they had it all pulled away. And he happens to have a very good perspective on this because he was one of the top three divers in the world in 1980. He was the top diver in the United States in 1980, and the U.S. team boycotted the 1980 Moscow Olympics. And so he was not allowed to compete when he was at the top of his game, and he was potentially a gold medal contender at the 1980 Olympics, and he didn't get to go. He was 20 years old at the time. 4 years later, he went back as a 24-year-old. He thought he'd have a good chance 4 years later. And he finished fifth at the Olympic trials, and only the top two get to go. So Randy Abelman never got to compete in an Olympics. He trained 8 years of his life. 8 years of his life were dedicated to competing in an Olympics, and he never got to compete. So he knows better than anybody what all these Olympians are going through, and he has been able to guide these five guys, four guys and one woman that he coaches through this whole ordeal because he went through it. He went through it himself. And he's a really interesting guy. He has a lot of interesting perspective. And so I spoke to him. And then I also spoke to Amy Deem, the University of Miami track and field coach, who was the 2012 U.S. Olympic coach for the London Olympics. She was the U.S. coach. So she also has a handful of athletes who have been training with her at UM, some for the U.S. and some for other countries. And all of their Olympic dreams are just over for now. And even if they host it next summer in 2021, which is what they're likely going to do, for athletes that are training at the elite level, like these people in track and field, swimming, diving, whatever the case may be, it's hard to sustain that level of excellence for a whole other 13 months, 14 months, 15 months. Also, some of them are on scholarship at UM. Like one of the divers, a couple of divers, I think, are seniors. So, you know, they're at UM now. They have a pool. They have somewhere to train. They're on scholarship. They're graduating now in May. So their scholarship is over. They're not going to have access to the pool or to the coach. They would have to privately finance their own training, you know, for the next 15, 16 months. So, you know, it's complicated, and it's really a shame for all those athletes, you know, the NBA players, the NFL players, the MLS players, and baseball, you know, they will get their seasons back sometime this season. They haven't been training 4 years for one game, for one moment, for one 10-second race. So it's really heartbreaking for Olympic athletes.
Were you shocked that Justin Gatlin said, nah, I'll be fine. I'll be 39. I'll be able to do it next year. And he's still going to train for another year and get ready for the games next year. How about that? Amazing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they will. I mean, a lot of them will.
Yeah, but he's 39.
At their peak.
He's 39. I mean, come on. Yeah. Justin Gatlin.
He needs to move on.
Wow.
He needs to move on. Find something else.
I mean, wow, but that's
find
amazing.
Find another job. Yeah, find another job.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's tough. I mean, everyone's got their own, you know. It's obviously affecting everybody,
yeah.
You know, but the ones that breaks my heart the most really are the hotel workers, you know, that I spoke to, because, you know, they're trying to support a family. And, you know, I talked to them and I said, well, how long can you go, you know, before it gets desperate? And the guy I spoke to said 2 weeks. He's like, I can probably make it through April 1st, but after that, I have no income. I mean, these are people that are going paycheck to paycheck,
right,
who have no savings, who have nothing. And they rely on that weekly paycheck to cover their bills.
Yeah.
And they have kids and stuff. And, you know, so it's really heartbreaking for those, you know, for those people, even more than, you know, athletes. They make a lot of money, you know, whether they play or don't play, they're going to be fine. It's everybody else, you know, that's suffering more.
I mean, how many of us live check to check? How many of our friends and family members live check? I mean, that's normal. That's a way of life for many, many, most people in this country. That's why this whole pandemic, I mean, it's just setting everything back. It's not, and it doesn't affect one person. It's affecting all of us in almost every walk of life outside of supermarkets and restaurants. You know, I mean, some restaurants, by the way. I mean, you know, the ones that can survive with takeout. Most of these restaurants also can't survive by just selling takeout either. You know what I mean?
And most people aren't doing, I mean, they have a small fraction of people that are doing the takeout. That's not even their normal.
That's right.
You know, it's nowhere near their normal work, you know, capacity. And, you know, they can try to get some income is better than none by doing takeout. But, oh no, all the restaurants are suffering. A lot of them are closed altogether. And even the ones that are doing takeout are suffering. Like I said, every hotel was ordered to be closed. They don't even have a choice. The government, the local government has said if all hotels are closed, period. So even if you wanted to run a hotel, you're not allowed. So every hotel is shut down, which means every single housekeeper, every cook, everybody who worked at the front desk, everybody who works at a hotel, you know, is out of business, which in the state of Florida is 330,000 hotel-related jobs. 330,000 people will be unemployed by the end of this week in the hotel industry. So it's huge, you know. And, you know, airlines, hotels, everything involving tourism. Obviously, the cruise industry, I mean, it's, you know, it's a huge industry in Miami and in Fort Lauderdale. The cruise industry is one of our biggest sources of income in this market. And there are no cruises right now. Yeah. So, you know, we're a state that lives by tourism and the tourism dollar. And right now, none of those are coming in. So it's a tough time.
You're in the middle of this story and you're covering it. When you start to hear, you know, can we get this thing going and get our country back around Easter, like the president's talking about, what goes through your mind? Because obviously the numbers are starting to grow. Now that we're doing massive testing, we're seeing the numbers grow. We're seeing more people die. We haven't, as they say, broken that curve or whatever it is. What's that saying that we
flatten the curve?
Flatten the curve. Yeah, exactly. We haven't even come close to flattening the curve yet. So we can possibly think about that. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I think, you know, time will tell. I mean, I think the numbers, you know, obviously the numbers of people who have it are going to raise because the numbers of people that are getting, I mean, I know a lot of people who've been tested and, you know, almost all of them have been negative, but there are a few people that I know that got it. You know, so the numbers of people getting it, obviously that number is going to spike because everybody's being tested. And 3 weeks ago, they were not being tested. But I'm looking more at the number of deaths. I'm an optimistic person. I see that in Miami-Dade County, there are zero deaths right now. There are 2.7 million people in Miami-Dade County. There are 55 people hospitalized, and there are zero deaths. Broward County, I think, has three deaths. You know, the state of Florida, I think, has 22. So, I mean, it's terrible that anybody dies, but people die of other things, you know, too. So I'm trying to remain optimistic that with the social distancing that we're all doing now, that the number will flatten. You know, as of 2 or 3 weeks ago, everybody was still all together. I mean, I was in Washington, D.C. covering a soccer game with 20,000 people in a stadium, and I was riding in an airport and riding an airplane and riding in Ubers and eating at restaurants. And, you know, everybody was doing their normal life 2 or 3 weeks ago. And nobody is. I mean, if they are, they're stupid. But most people are doing some type of social distancing. And I think a lot of people are doing complete hibernation like we are in my family. So, you know, I think that as long as we keep doing this, you know, for the next couple of weeks, for sure, you know, they say the experts that I read a New York Times story that was very detailed that said, you know, all these scientists said that if everybody would truly stay 6 feet apart from each other for 14 days, it would be over. The problem is it's hard to get everybody. You can't police everybody
right
in their own homes. You know, yeah, we don't have like GPS monitors where the government can tell if you're 6 feet apart from the person next to you. So it's really up to everybody to be a responsible citizen and to do what they say and to do the right thing. And, you know, I think if they do, I think if people do what they're told and, you know, they're making a lot of harsh decisions and closures and everything, and they're doing it to force people to be apart. Because if you give people a choice, there is a certain segment of the population that's just not going to do it, you know. So they have to just make it illegal. They have to say you can't go to a park. You can't have any more than 10 people. You can't do this. Now there's going to be a 10 o'clock curfew, I think, starting tonight. So, you know, they're doing everything possible. The officials are doing everything possible to separate everybody. And you know, and yeah, flatten the curve. Make sure that, you know, it'll reach a peak number and then it'll flatten out and then it'll go down, which is what has happened in other places. And, you know, we have to just all do the right thing and hope for the best and try to stay sane and try not to panic and try not to be too depressed, because then that leads to other issues. That leads to alcoholism. It leads to drugs. It leads to anxiety. It leads to people, you know, doing desperate things. And, you know, that's a whole other set of problems that could be coming if people freak out too much. So we're trying in our house to, of course, follow everything we're supposed to do, which we're doing, but we're also trying to remain calm. We're trying to do other things other than just watch the news 24/7 because that'll make you crazy.
Now, let me ask you something. Is it fair that we just blame New Yorkers for our problems since they're the ones that have escaped New York, come down here and spread it out? And they're the ones that have that monster breakout going on. So is it all right for me to blame New Yorkers, thinking, you know, they came here to pollute the sixth borough?
No, I don't think that's fair. I think it's that happens to just be the dentist. I say that because my son and daughter-in-law are in Miami, and they came from New York.
Oh, no. Oh,
yes,
no,
they're
spreading
it.
They're
fine. No, they're fine. They don't have cooties. They don't have cooties. That's a very, very big city. It's a very dense city. It's the densest city by far in the United States. They use subways. You know, the subway's a petri dish for this. So, you know, it's a city that if there is going to be an outbreak of something, New York is the city that's going to have it the most. Because, and then San Francisco's number two as far as density. So, you know, I think it was something like 28,000 people per square mile or something like that in New York. I mean, it's New York is a very, very, very dense city. Everybody lives in close quarters in little buildings, in little apartments, and they all take the subway together. And, you know, if there's something that's going to be contagious, it's going to spread in New York. And San Francisco is the second densest city. So it's not too much of a surprise that the densest urban areas are the ones that have it worse. And the more rural areas where people are separated don't have it as bad. And, you know, Miami right now is we're doing pretty good considering we do have 2.7 million people here. But most people, although there are a lot of condos and stuff, but a lot of people are in their own homes, and also it's warm, it's sunny, people are outside. They're not just cooped up inside. People are taking walks, they're separating, they're getting fresh air. So, you know, that's all we can do. I mean, all we can do is focus on our own families, focus on your own self and your own family and do what's right. And if everybody does what's right, then this will pass in time. It's just a difficult time to go through, but you know, I think if everyone does the right thing, we'll get through it and we'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we'll definitely be fine, and we'll get through this. And you know, I got a buddy that lives in New York, and living in the city is the worst.
No, that's the worst place to be right now.
Yeah,
the worst place to be right now.
They have no space. That's the thing. He goes, oh, I got to be in my house my apartment the entire time. And if I go out, I have to have a mask and gloves because there's people in my building. There's people in the street. It doesn't. I don't have
the elevator.
I don't have any. Yeah,
the elevator.
He goes, like, you can walk out to a yard. None of us have yards. There's nowhere for us to go. And that's, you know, unless you live in Jersey or something. I mean, it's just if you're stuck
in
the city.
But the people who live in the city, which my son, they have two little kids. They have a 9-month-old baby and a 5-year-old boy. And, you know, they're here. You know, they're in our pool right now. They're separated from us. They're staying in a separate. We happen to have a detached office, and it has a little guest room over there. And so that's where they're staying for the time being. But at least there's fresh air. You know, they're in a small space, but they can go out. They can take walks. Our grandson can ride his bike around the block. And that's something that they couldn't do in New York, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah. No, it's crazy. All right, so
place to be right now.
What are you working on the Herald so folks can check your coverage out on the corona?
Okay, well, yeah, today, like I said, I have the Inter-Miami story about the GPS training and all that stuff. That's online today. There's a story about the 330,000 hotel workers out of work. That's posted today online. And right now I'm working on an airline-related story that has to do with a proposed bailout. The federal bailout that would give $58 billion to the airlines, which would protect the airline workers' jobs through September 30th. So I'm doing a story kind of localizing that whole issue about the bailout to airlines.
Okay.
So that's what I'm working on today.
Okay. All right. And the MLS, by the way, extended it to 60 days also. They did that, I think, since the last time we talked. They went from 30 to 60 days, which...
They're going to step in line with everybody else. And, you know, they say that they feel they have all the way through December to finish their season. It's possible. I mentioned in my story today, and Luis Robles is on the, he's one of the executive board members of the union, of the players union. they had a conference call with Don Garber yesterday. And, you know, he said they discussed all the different possibilities. When they do come back, even they discussed the possibility of playing behind closed doors, which they don't want to do. But if they have to do that at the very beginning, they have to play games where it's just on TV for people to watch. Fans can't go. That is something that they are, you know, they're considering all the options. And that is one of the options that was discussed, that if, you know, if they don't allow big crowds for a certain amount of time, then they may have to ease their way back in to normalcy by maybe starting off with games, private games behind closed doors, and little by little allowing, you know, crowds of certain sizes to come. You know, maybe they just allow their supporter groups to come at the beginning, and then they can let more, you know, let more people. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens once things start to turn around, once they flatten that curve and we can start thinking about normal life again, you know, how they're going to. I don't think they're just going to say, okay, we're going to have sports again. We're going to have 70,000 people, you know, at a football game, and we're going to have 30,000, you know, we're going to have 70,000 in Atlanta to watch Atlanta United. I doubt that that's how it's going to happen. I think it's going to be gradual. So
that's interesting.
We'll see what happens.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Follow her on Twitter at Cough Sports. More importantly, during this coronavirus outbreak, follow her at the Miami Herald. She is covering it and doing a great job. She is Michelle Kaufman. Michelle, as always, you are the best. Thank you for taking some time.
Sure. All right. We'll talk next week.
Be safe.
Take care, everybody.
You got
okay.
it. There you go. Okay, Michelle
bye.
Kaufman. She is awesome. And we hope her and the family are all safe. We hope all of you out there are safe also.